You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, Benjamin and myself talk about 6 effective leadership behaviors for statisticians. Today, I would like to start with a very, very small request for you. Could you please identify 3 colleagues, maybe in the same company or in a different company, that are also statisticians that would benefit from that, or maybe at academia, or maybe at your alma mater that you have studied. Some statisticians that you think would benefit from this podcast, and send them. Just 3, maybe. Yeah, that would be really, really awesome, because we want to spread the word about this podcast and have it as big of an impact on our overall function, on us statisticians, as much as possible. One other thing is, I recently ran into someone that was listening to this podcast on the browser. Which of course is fine, then you have the show notes and everything all there together. However, of course, that is also tedious. So if you rather would like to listen to it on your smartphone, that's possible. So just use one of the many podcast browsers, search for The Effective Statistician, and there you have it. And if you subscribe to it, then you get automatically the updates of the weekly episodes delivered to your smartphone. The podcast is produced in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefits of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video-on-demand content library, free registration to pretty awesome PSI webinars, and much, much more. And you wouldn't believe, it's really, really cheap. It's only £20 annually for non-high-income countries and very, very reasonable £95 for high-income countries. So, visit the PSI website at psiweb.org and become a PSI member today. Now, welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician with Benjamin Pieske and myself. Hi, Benjamin. How are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. Very well. Thanks. We have a great topic today. One of your favorite, isn't it?
Yeah, leadership is one of my favorites, and it's actually inspired by one of my favorite leadership podcasts, actually a German one, which is recorded by Olaf Kapinski. And he recently had a really nice episode about, he was talking about 5 impactful or effective behaviors of leaders. And he always takes it more from a kind of supervisory position. But I think I felt like that is also very good for statisticians not being supervisors or not necessarily being supervisors. And he asked actually, you know, what other behaviors would be out there. And I added a 6th one. So today we'll basically speak about 6 effective leadership behaviors of statisticians. And the last one is really something that is close to my heart, but we'll take that to the end.
Yep. As you said, it's the last one.
Okay, so the first one is being, I'm not sure it's completely best translated, but I translated it with being confidently relaxed.
That's an interesting one to start with, actually. I mean, you know, if you talk about leadership, you would be probably, you know, talking about more about, you know, about, let's say, knowledge, power, and strong things. But then it's about confidently, but relaxed. Why is that? What?
So actually, when I was listening to that, a former colleague of mine, and actually someone that was on the show before, Shafi Chaudhry, comes to my mind. So I remember a situation where there was a lot of kind of panic in the study team, and, you know, oh, what's happening? Everything is going south, and, you know, we'll not meet the timelines. And everybody was, you know, getting really, really nervous. And he was coming into the team being very relaxed, laid back, and but confident to actually get things done. And that calmed down everybody, and that helped everybody to focus on the things that we can control, on getting everything nicely sorted, one step after the other. And that was really, really good leadership behavior. So, how do you feel about that?
No, I think that's a good, it's a good point of, about, because, you know, the energy or these chaotic energy that people sometimes, or teams sometimes have, yeah, needs to be observed. So it needs to be, you know, put in to somebody. And this is true about leadership, that, you know, giving them, you know, okay, you know, just calm down, sit down. Let's talk about it. Let's see where we need help, where we can, you know, support or whatsoever. So really just get the wind out of the sails and just really just slow down for a moment and really set back.
And who would you rather follow? You know, someone that comes in and says, looks relaxed, embodies confidence, or would you follow someone that comes in and says, like, you know, completely panicking,
shouting and you know, making noises. Yeah, no, I agree. It's good. It's really, I think this is much appreciated. And this is, you know, sometimes it's good that waves are being blocked away by your leader or you as a leader, and don't let this pass through to the team, so that they can really just, you know, come back to what they are supposed to do and what they're actual aim is, and concentrate and reorganize themselves and really get back. And that's the power or the relaxness that you need to take into a group to make them confident and turn them into, you know, moving forward with a goal again.
It's you still can create a sense of urgency, yeah, in here, but it should be, you know, urgent is not panic. You know, that's something different. You're focused, you're concentrated, and you know what's at stake, but you're still, you know, relaxed and moving it forward.
Yeah. So the relax is not about, you know, slowing down. It's about taking away the chaotic situation and organizing it again.
It could be slowing down if slowing down is required. Sometimes, you know, moving, so going slowly means you're moving fast overall. You know, if you run completely in the wrong direction, that isn't helpful anyway. Yeah. So that's where I think, you know, having this relaxed approach helps a lot. Okay. Let's go to behavior number two.
Being decisive. Just from what we talked about before, is really just, you know, you are the leader. You are the one that sometimes needs to make a decision and guide the team into the right directions. Maybe from outside a little bit, or maybe from inside, but, you know, people are looking up to you, you know, with question marks in their eyes, and you are the one to make the decision and not to just push it back necessarily and say, well, you know, I don't know, maybe you decide. No, you're the leader. That's your decision.
And I think that's especially important for us statisticians. I think a lot of statisticians see themselves more as consultants and not as team members. And as a consultant, you don't make any decisions. You just, you know, advise. But lots of the, let's say, more technical topics, the team can't understand completely anyway. So they're
they need to basically rely on your expertise and on being decisive. And sometimes, you know, I see that also, you know, that teams spend an enormous amount of time discussing about really, really small things. I was just, you know, looking into some SAPs and things like that over the last years, and the number of cut points I see in there, let's say for age as a covariate, you know, 4 cut points, 5 cut points, you know, and you just, that doesn't look very decisive. Yeah. So why do you need all these different cut points? So either, you know, there's really some completely non-linear behavior going on, then you need to do something different anyway, or there's, you know, some clear guidelines or that you need to age more than 65 and less than 65, and that's it. Yeah. But you don't need a handful of different cut points. That just shows to me that people couldn't make a decision.
Yeah, and it's true, because there, I mean, as you said, there are sometimes good reasons for having several points included. And in this case, if you talk about subgroups or data points, then, but if it's about the one or the other, or you're going left or going right, or what it is, that's a decision where you need to raise your hand and just make a decision and move the team forward together with you.
Yeah. I think the next one, the third one, is where pretty much all statisticians would agree to. That is being knowledgeable. And in terms of knowledgeable, I think this entails not only, you know, the statistical knowledge, but also your therapeutic area knowledge, the business knowledge around it. And where I usually see the biggest limitations is the third part. So people know about stats, people know about the disease, but they don't know how that has an impact on the overall business and beyond. Yeah.
No, I think we touched this before in some of our discussions around this, that as a statistician and also as a leader in general, I think, you know, you have to decide and you have to move forward and think not only because of a, you know, like a very siloed decision or a case. It is then, you know, further to that, it's not only about the study, it's really about the business. So you're not alone in the world. You're not as a team alone. It's just, you know, there's much more connected, and that's about, you know, being knowledgeable. It's not only within one silo, within statistics, or maybe even outside in the therapeutic area. It is also about what the whole business is about, the company that's behind you. That's all is coming together. And this is something that every leader, not only statisticians, should be very well aware of.
Yeah, and you should know about who will be impacted down the line. Yeah, so your in-exclusion criteria, your CRFs that you're designing for your phase 3 study has a direct impact on, for example, reimbursement dossiers. And if you're not collecting the right data, or not in the right way, or you're excluding patients that are relevant and that payers want to see, then you may have a great submission to the regulators, but you'll never get the drug reimbursed later on. So you basically launch the crickets. So having that knowledge is really, really important. Or at least knowing who to talk to get the knowledge.
Yeah. No, I actually was more thinking about the, you know, when you talk about the CRO business, I think, for example, is, you know, any decision that you make as a statistician in terms of, in the study, that's not necessarily like in the way of designing a study, might be, but it's not, but any, you know, anything where you see, okay, that's going the wrong direction. We need to change it. That may have, for example, an impact on the budget. Mm-hmm. So moving in the right direction. So doing this change or communicating the change and applying it, that's maybe the right decision, but it's not the right decision if it's not together with a business decision about, let's say, change in scope. So it is that's, you know, it's more than just the actual stats background or the stats knowledge and the decision around that is always more, you know, from that's what I was more having in mind when I said about the business environment.
Your decision to add this analysis approach to all your analysis, and you basically double the number of tables just with one sentence, which might be in your SAP.
Yeah, some clients may be very happy about it, getting it for free. But so that's just not the way that should be. I mean, if there's a reason for this, then it should be involved, and there's more behind than just adding or doubling the number of outputs.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to number four.
Being friendly. That's a good one. I like that one. And you know, luckily, I mean, most of my, when I look around my day-to-day business, I think this is actually they're following this one. So it's not, you know, that's a very hostile environment, but there are sometimes people where you really think, so I, you know, it's so basic. It's so basic being a leader and being friendly, and they miss it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's so basic rules of being, you know, polite and talkative, friendly, and you know, just get in contact with people and setting the basic human rules, but they miss it.
Yeah, and I think it's also knowing your pain points there. So this is, I can recollect a situation where I was in a bigger meeting and I was, let's say, accused, maybe too strong word, but it was suggested that I was, you know, not taking on the work that I should have taken on. And I was taken really by surprise about that. And, you know, you could in this moment, you know, slash back and you know, just, you know, be hostile, aggressive about it. If it's an unfair comment, I can remember situations in my career where I have done that and it never played out well. So in the most recent situation, I stayed calm. I said, no, that's not the case. And actually it's the opposite. And I said upfront before entering into the project that, I can only contribute a very little bit and most of the resources needs to come from somewhere else. And well, the people in the discussion were just not present at the time of this decision. So they didn't have all the data. And that is something is really basic, but it's really, really important. And just being unfriendly once can destroy a lot of relationships that you need.
That's kind of, you know, the way when people, you know, how people remember you is, you know, you have 10 occasions where you've been friendly, but just one not being friendly, and that's the one they remember for sure.
So that doesn't mean you need to be everybody's darling. Yeah. So as we say in Germany, everybody's darling is everybody's idiot. But so that doesn't mean you need to take on every kind of work and every request. But saying friendly and decisive no is actually quite helpful. Okay. Let's go to number five.
Yeah, number five. We have being curious.
Are you curious?
To be honest, once in a while. No, actually, I think I'm quite curious. It's just what this is also aiming at is more being curious, you know, at the right time for the right thing. Because, you know, if you always check back on, you know, let's say the family background of somebody, and if the grandma is now back on, you know, not being sick anymore, you know, and so that's nice, but that's not the point here. It's really about, you know, when you need to understand when people struggle or when people have really hard times or difficult times in moving forward, different things to do. And, you know, understand them, try to follow up with them, see if they manage this well. It's not about, you know, necessarily learn, you know, about learning new things, or it's really about try to understand what the people are doing, what people are up to, and take them serious and follow up, check with them, be curious what they're doing, how they progressed, how they proceeded with their job in the team. So I think this is quite important. And as a matter, you know, just as a matter of time, I think that's why I'm saying once in a while I'm curious. This is the biggest constraints on being curious is really the time to follow up and to check back in with the progress and everything and with everyone, actually.
Yeah, but I think this checking in sometimes is just a very simple question like, are you comfortable with how things are going at the moment? Or do you feel comfortable performing this task?
Yes, the question is easy. And if the answer is yes, it's also easy. But if the answer is no, then it starts to be time consuming. And that's why, I mean, this is more the point that you usually, you know, if somebody struggles, and you check back in, then you also need the time to follow up on this. Because then if the answer is no, and then you disappear because you're too busy in the next call or whatsoever, then this doesn't help. So,
yeah, you need to have a little bit of time for that, for sure. But I think very often it's well invested time.
Indeed.
Also, kind of understanding whether there are other ways to achieve your goal. Yeah. So I recently had a discussion where someone showed me a dashboard, and he used a specific software that was especially good for interactive visualizations. I was curiously asking questions about it. Okay, why did you choose the software? And he said, well, because that is, you know, he thought that is the standard software that everybody should use. And I said, okay, this is especially good for interactivity. So what's the interactive part in here? And he says, well, actually, there's not so much of an interactive part in here. It's more of a report. And I said, interesting. But then you could do something much more simple with much less hassle down the road in terms of validation. Because if it's not interactive, yeah, you don't need to do so many validations on it. Because then it's more or less just a report. Yeah. Interesting. And then we switched the tool, which cut down tremendously on the timeline and the effort. Yeah. And it's, and for that person, now it's clear he can actually has the freedom to choose. Yeah. He's not needs to go to this one specific tool because it was just a perceived standard tool. Yeah, it was not actually the standard tool. So this kind of curiosity may help a lot in many regards. So asking why did you do that way? Yeah, and sometimes you may learn about completely new things that you have never seen before. So the goal may be clear how to get to some. The goal what to achieve may be clear, but how to achieve it. As we say, many different roads to Rome.
And I think also, and I mean, this is kind of, you know, being curious also means that you are usually one of the first taking the step. So because, you know, you're interested in where this is going. So as an example, if there's a new software or new system being opened and rolled, then it would make sense that you as the leader, this may actually be more the line management type of leader and less the study team leader, is taking the first step in doing so. So to understand when people are struggling, so what is it? And also to show them that's the way to go, to be being the first one and being interested in what the new system brings, what the advantages are. So I think this is being curious also means maybe being the first or maybe one of the first to really take a step in a new direction, and don't be afraid of it. give a good example.
And now we come to the last. And now I want to try something new. Here's this button in the software that I have never pressed on. So let's see. Maybe this one is better.
No, the other one is better.
Actually, I wanted to have something like, because now the last one comes, number six. And it's that yours. Is being vulnerable.
That's an interesting one.
I think it actually is a really, really good behavior. It means that you don't need to know it all. You don't need to, you know, have all the answers. You don't need to be the perfect guy always. That you can also say, I don't know, or I have messed up. I think this one really triggers a lot of openness in discussions. It helps people to relate to you, and it helps a lot with building trust. And that's why I think it's so, so important.
That's true. It's just showing that you're not perfect and, you know, building up the empathy for, you know, from other people to understand that you are also a human. I think it's, you know, still, it's a very valid point, but this, yeah, I think there might be more discussions around it if you put this on a, you know, on a poster for being a strong leader, especially as this is kind of it's more a weak part
at first sight,
you know, yeah. at first sight exactly. So that's why I think it's quite interesting, and I think many of the especially again in a team, as a team leader, it's very much appreciated if you show vulnerability, so when you that you are not perfect. I'm not sure though if it's really up, you know, and if I think about upper management, and so if this is still a valid point, but for us as statisticians, as a leader, as team leaders of statisticians, or also in the study team, it's a very, very good point. I think it's actually, I believe, probably the easiest one that, because this is the one you don't even need to learn about really. Because it's just that, I mean, in ways of, you know, that you can just show how it is, because you are not perfect. Nobody's perfect. Everyone is making mistakes and does have things to discuss about or to open and just to honestly say, well, I don't know.
To be honest, I think I'm not sure whether it's the easiest one. I would say it's nearly the hardest one, maybe next to confidently relaxed. because it takes the most courage to be that way, I would say.
Only if you start doing it and you haven't done it before.
If you get used to it.
If you grow into a team with getting more responsibility, more leadership and everything, I think you should just keep it as it was before, because, you know, before you showed this vulnerability to your manager, for example, now you showed you to your team. So I agree. If you reinvent it or bring it in after, you know, you kind of try to avoid it, that might be difficult. But I think from just everyone who's growing into such a leadership role, it's probably just be honest with yourself and stick to this.
I'm just remembering of a couple of situations in our leadership program where Gary and myself, we talk about leadership mistakes that we have done. And these situations where we talk about that takes courage, you know, to step in front of your audience and say, here are things I've messed up, and that's what I learned from it. Yeah. Not being kind of, I'm the perfect person that knows about everything about leadership. And I've always been a great leader.
Natural leader?
No, there's no natural born leaders. That needs courage.
Yeah. But it helps build a relationship between the participants of the Effective Statistician Leadership Program and Gary and myself. And it helps to create an environment, and especially in our small group discussions, where everybody is opening up and everybody is sharing their struggles. And only by sharing these problems, these struggles, these hurdles, people can learn to overcome them. You know, it would be, you know, what kind of learning environment would it be where everybody is just showing off how great they are? Well, that's there's no learning involved in there. Yeah, it's that would be just, you know, showing off, and yeah, not a learning program.
Yeah, and also if you show, for example, you know, that you don't know. I mean, that's something that I'm quite often mentioning to anyone, saying that, you know, sorry, I don't know because I'm not that much involved. I need to, and the second point is actually, that's what I'm going to say, is the second point is you can turn this into a strength. If you say, sorry, I don't know right now. I don't know by heart. But I will, you know, I will check. I will follow up with the team, with whoever it is, or who can, or can read, I can investigate, and I will let you know. So that's something that is appreciated. That's something that shows, you know, your skills as a leader, saying, well, I don't know, but you know, this is the solution. Yeah. I would take care.
It's much better than pretending you have some knowledge.
That's true.
Okay, very good. In terms of the last one, there is this amazing TED Talk by Brené Brown, who is really the person that speaks about vulnerability. She's a well-known researcher in this field and you know, has done lots of original research about shame and other things in this area. And we'll link to her TED Talk that was already watched by an amazing more than 44 million times.
We reached 50, didn't we? Oh, 15,000 it was.
Yeah, a couple of zeros are missing.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
Yeah. And see, 20 minutes, I think, is well invested time. Okay. Speaking about time, we are just beyond the 30 minute mark. And today we wanted to make sure that we are not that long with this episode. So
excellent. It was really good. Talk to you next time.
Talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.
The show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background and makes it possible for me to get a lot of work done. Thank you for listening. Visit theeffectivestatistician.com for the show notes, like usual, and please identify three colleagues that you would like to share this podcast with it, and of course, then share it. So, reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.